The Senate Committee on Rules and Administration will come to order. Senator Sieben has
here.
Are you okay to wait a minute?
Yeah.
Senator Sieben? Yes. That's okay. It'll only be Senator Wieger that's upset with you.
Thank you. You
have another bill up, apparently. So, go ahead, Senator Sieben. What do you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 74 was passed by the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. It is simply a resolution calling on Congress to do something about ballast water. Specifically, we all are aware of the detrimental effects of invasive species, especially that are passed through ballast waters in the Great Lakes. The reason that we're asking for a resolution, Mr. Chair and members, is because the DNR and others, there's no clearly identified means for treating ballast water, and so there really is a need for the federal government to do something about this issue. And not that our state isn't capable in some ways of beginning to address it, but it really is a larger federal issue, and that's why I feel it's important to pass this resolution to put the state of Minnesota on record as stating that we as a state would like to see some resolution on the treatment of ballast water.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear, members, doesn't it, that this is something that we can't handle just by ourselves in Minnesota. So,
sure.
Senator Sieben, you have some language that maybe you want to change here. Senator Metzen, do you have an amendment on
that? Yeah, I had talked to Senator Sieben earlier, and apparently there's a little verbiage changed from the House's language, and she'd like hers to be matched up with the House's language, and I'm not exactly sure what the amendment does, but I'd like to help out.
Senator Sieben, Metzen moves the A4. Senator Sieben, why don't you tell us, looks pretty technical, or is there something pretty significant here? Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair, I think it is all grammatical and technical in nature. The one... really a policy change, but an additional thing that Representative Hansen, the chief author in the House, on line 1.17 of the amendment, he wanted to also have the resolution sent to the Great Lakes Fishery Commission.
Oh, I don't know about that. I will so move.
Any questions on the A4? No questions on Senator.
Mr. Chair, and I don't, you know, just ask. If this were all done as said, would there be effect on commerce in the United States, in Minnesota? Would this have any effect on international commerce on the Great Lakes if we did this as, if what happened, you know, if what was called for here occurred, would there be any effect on commerce in the Great Lakes? Would there, in other words, be ships that couldn't navigate the Great Lakes?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, one of the reasons that we want Congress to help manage this issue is because the various invasive species are having an impact on our Great Lakes and the shipping industry, and some of the treatments of ballast water that are currently under consideration are of significant cost to shippers. So that is, I guess, one of the reasons we want the federal government's help in managing this is because we need some sort of economically and environmental solution that is acceptable to all parties involved, including the shippers and the, you know, commerce industry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so on the Metzen motion, anybody in the audience want to testify on the amendment? Anybody in the audience want to testify on the amendment? And this was through the was there testimony on this bill in the which committee did you start in? And there was a good airing of the issue there and discussion.
Yes, sir.
So
on the Metzen motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Metzen then moves that it's the Senate file still, correct? Senate file 65. As amended, be recommended to pass. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Sieben, thank you very much. Senator Wieger. And members, just for your purpose as well, Senator Wieger's coming up. There are numerous resolutions like this that are being asked to be sent to Congress. And in consultation with Senator Clark, we kind of went through them and thought that these two perhaps were worthy of forwarding so we don't get too carried away here. Senator Wieger has another one on No Child Left Behind, and we just, I guess, don't view that one as quite as significant as this one on special ed. So I think we'd like to limit it just to this one, Senator, if we could. Wieger? Okay, so Senator Wieger, tell us about Senate File 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 13 asked Congress to hold to its pledge of 40% funding of special education. As you know, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act passed in 1975, and there was that pledge to eventually fund 40% of special ed costs to the states. The high watermark has been 18%. Now it's about 17%. If that pledge was kept...
The water was the last bill.
Pardon me? Yes, okay. But had that pledge been kept, we would not have nearly the problem we have now in K-12 education, and you are well aware of the need, I believe, and we're trying to again send that message. I'm sure we'll be addressing special ed and other in the budget bill as well, but we have new leadership in Congress as well, and we want to send that message. So it's with the unanimous recommendation of the Senate Education Policy Committee.
Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, remember on page 2, line 5, where it says the states with an apostrophe S, I believe that should be without the apostrophe. This is a plural, not a possessive.
Which linguist wants to move that? Cohen? Senator Cohen moves that amendment. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, with a bit of reluctance, I think we'd like, did you want my discussion about resolutions to Congress? Would this be appropriate?
No.
Well, we're limiting them. There are others that are people requesting, and we've kind of limited it to these two.
Mr. Chairman, then I will give. And Senator Rieger, with all respect, and Mr. Chairman, I think you were the person who accused me of this, but I'm not sure, of quoting the New York Times. And I've only done that. This is the only time I've ever done it.
Well, you haven't done it yet, but you're about to?
No, this it's only in regard to this issue.
You've got to be out of here by 5.
Because I mentioned this several years ago, somewhere on the floor or something, but I recall an article of I don't know, 10 years ago, that apparently there is a room in the Capitol building, and whenever they get these resolutions from legislatures, they put them in a couple of file cabinets in some room in the basement of the U.S. Capitol. And that's what happens with resolutions from state legislatures. So I just...
Senator Cohen, on this one... This one actually lays foundation, I think, for where our Senate Education Committee is going to be going.
Well,
I think they're going to focus on special education.
That's, like I said, my comments are only related to when this thing gets transmitted to the U.S. Congress and it finds its way to some file cabinet somewhere in the basement of the U.S. Capitol.
Senator Wieger, I think that's true, actually. Senator Wieger, isn't it true that a lot of districts that have passed operating referendums, the per-pupil amount of their operating referendums is totally chewed up by this special ed cross-subsidy that's going on in the district. So they've passed referendums for general ed, but in reality, when they put their budgets together, they literally have to put all that money into this subsidy for special ed because we have failed to fund that appropriately from the state and federal level. Is that accurate statement?
That's true. It's costing hundreds of millions of dollars in the state, and we could add 2%, 3% on the formula. A lot of that gets eaten up right away in special ed.
So it's kind of phony budgeting when we say we're going to put money on the formula, and it just really never gets there. It ends up trying to pay for something in another part of the budget that we didn't fund, special education.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, members of Congress actually have asked us to weigh in on it. Congresswoman McCollum, who's working on this, as well as No Child Left Behind, Senator Klobuchar, and others, and they want
Governor Ventura, we had a tripartisan effort when Ventura was here to actually, people went to Congress from Minnesota, including Governor Ventura, to pitch this, to say, come on.
And Mr. Chairman, and Senator Wicker, some of the congressional delegation has asked for this kind of resolution, and they're going to use it. Great. And that would make a difference, and maybe it'll go someplace else. And by the way, just a parenthetical note, having said it, I'm not trying to quote the New York Times, but I will point out to members, one of our colleagues had a picture in the New York Times this morning. Senator Saltzman.
Senator Saltzman was in the New York Times?
Big picture of Senator Saltzman in the New York Times this morning.
I should never ask. Was it positive?
Yes.
What was in there?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good.
Yes.
Oh, is this the follow-up to the Minnesota legislature?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Excellent. Okay. All right, so Senator Cohen moves Senate File 13. Is that correct, Senator Cohen?
Certainly.
As amended, be recommended to pass.
All right.
Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Wicker, thank you. Okay, Senator Bedsold, are you with us yet or no? Okay, then Senator Banbier. You have three bills before us, Senator. Two bills and one resolution. Why don't we, just let me look here, why don't we talk about Senate File 710 first?
Okay. Can I get a copy of the bills?
Senator Vandiver, Senate File 710.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate File 710 is intended to eliminate per diem as a method of compensation, allow members to present their actual expense costs for reimbursement, and changes to simply a regular salary to avoid, I think, some of the confusion surrounding per diem. And I do have an author's amendment that is intended to clarify. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, we got late notice of the meeting. Yes,
Senator Vandiver?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
What was late about the notice?
I got late.
We need to be very careful here.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And I want to point out, I believe this is an open meeting.
Mr. Chair, it is an open meeting.
Are you aware of the Senate Rules Committee ever meeting in closed session, Senator Vandiver?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm not. And if I could, I would like to apologize for a statement that was on the video that said behind closed doors. I had thought I told staff to take it out. It was still in there. It was my responsibility, and it shouldn't have been. So I would like to apologize to the chair and to the committee for that.
Senator Vandiver, you want to hand up? Should we hand out the amendment?
What the amendment attempts to do is to have a five-year phase-in of the per diem, adding the per diem over 5 years to the salary instead of eliminating it all at once, so that it has less of an impact initially in putting it in. It's putting it right on top of the salary because I think it's somewhat sensitive politically.
to add the entire amount all at once might be more difficult. So in making that transition, it does it over a period of 5 years. And that's what the amendment changed.
Discussion.
Chair, I thought if you... this would have the effect of adding to our salaries over so much a year for 5 years to our salaries?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman or Mr. Watson, I thought if you raise your salary, it had to be come 2 years later or after the next election. Mr. Watson, maybe.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, you're correct. The Constitution requires that an increase in compensation for members of the legislature not take effect until after there has been an intervening election of the House of Representatives.
Mr. Chairman, then how could this work? If he's adding to our salary, Mr. Chairman, each.
Mr. Chairman, could we get the amendment?
We're making copies.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, looking at line 1.26, I'm not sure that part of it works, because the next election of the House would be in November of 2008. Let's see. You reduce it January 1 and increase. I think that increase couldn't occur until January of 2009. So I think there would be a year delay if you were trying to comply with the constitutional requirement.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you want to try to. I think you probably have to. I just don't think it works the way it's.
Senator Vanderbilt.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Watson, would advancing line 126 and the dates after that 1 year, would that comply? Would that accomplish going past the general election?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vanderbilt, I believe that it would.
So, Mr. Chair, would that be an oral amendment?
It's your amendment. You just incorporate.
I could incorporate that into the amendment.
So let's
see. 26, change 2007 to 2008. Line 27, 2009.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think also on line 25, the 2008 should change to 2009. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
We don't have the amendment yet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lanza.
Wouldn't this mean that there would be no increase in compensation from where we are now for the next, what is it, 5, 6, 7 years? I think that would be the effect, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, I think there's still on line 1-8 a blank appropriation to account. You could accomplish a salary increase if you wanted to above and beyond the incorporation of the per diem.
It appears that's been deleted from the bill. Line 1.8 has been deleted under this amendment. Let me ask, does anybody on the Rules Committee want to offer the amendment?
Yeah,
Senator Senjum offers the 0067. Further discussion.
Chairman Pappas, Chairman. Mr. Chairman. can you go over again the cross outs and the additions here? I didn't have this amendment when we were doing this.
Mr. Watson, how was the amendment verbally changed?
Mr. Chairman, the changes were on line 1.25, change 2008 to 2009. On line 26, change 2007 to 2008. And on line 27, change 2008 to 2009.
Is Senator St. John?
Mr. Chair, and so effectively then, Senator Vanderbilt, if this were to go forward, we would have over the course of, was it 5 years or at least, I'll just say 5 years because I can't find it. We'd have a program where we'd have a salary. Any additional expenses then would be reimbursed through some sort of a paper, you know, a submittal to fiscal services. In other words, we'd be tracking within our cars and everywhere else those kind of expenses.
Just
getting at the paperwork part of it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sentum, it would, yes. If we're calling them expenses, it would. They would need to be expenses. But in talking to the revisor, it was my understanding that this wouldn't prevent an increase in compensation. I think the House author had it included in line 1-8, but I think there's a provision somewhere else in statute where we could still increase our pay and salary also. This is just incorporating the elimination of the per diem.
Claire Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, are you thinking that the salary then would be based on whatever the maximum per diem has been? Or, I mean, not everybody takes the same per diem, so you wouldn't want a system where everybody, where different people were getting different salaries.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, no, that wasn't my intent. This is just to incorporate the current per diem into salary so that it wouldn't amount to a reduction.
The maximum per diem allowed?
The maximum per diem allowed as of January 1st, I think, 2007. It does not include the new per diem, but the committee could do that if they wanted to.
Don't members collect? Per diem is a per day amount. And different members collect different days.
Right.
Because some people are in commissions or committees or...
Or just have more work to do.
Senator Cullen.
Well, Chairman, Senator Vanderbilt, let me just make a couple of comments. Because I have some sympathy with what you're trying to do. And some of the same concerns. But I'm not sure you're going about it the right way. And for a period of time, let me make sure, I think everybody understands, you don't have to take per diem. Mm-hmm. And for a period of time, a number of years, I didn't take any, zero. And then I started to take a look at some of the money I was losing in the process, and I ended up taking per diem. And my practice is that I don't take the full amount, and I don't take any per diem during the interim. If I come here for a committee meeting or other work at the Capitol, when we're out of session, I don't take any. I never turn in any kind of a form. The other thing, and this happens to be a reflection of my district, is I don't take any kind of district allowance. For me to drive from the state capitol building to my district is not exactly what it is for Senator Frederickson, who is somebody who, or Senator Bach, who needs to have some type of mileage allotment. I don't need that, given the geographic proximity. It seems to me, if you want to address the question of per diem, rather than go through all this convoluted kind of language, how about just figuring out what the salary is without the per diem, and then authoring a bill that says the legislative salary should be $50,000 a year. And as of whatever the appropriate date would be, January 1st, 2009, include the language that this does not prevent reimbursement for documented expenses, and just author a bill to set the salary at $50,000 or $60,000. Isn't that a better way to do it and get at the same thing you're trying to accomplish?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I think that is the House File 710. So maybe we don't want to adopt this amendment because that, I believe that's what that does.
Senator, do you still want to offer the amendment?
I could withdraw the amendment.
You can't withdraw. You're not on the committee. Senator Senjum?
Mr. Chair, I will withdraw the amendment.
Okay. So we have Senate File 710 in front of us. Senator Slanksa.
Mr. Chair, you know, what I have noticed is that some legislators are very busy during the interim and some aren't very busy at all. In fact, some of them I don't see from the time the session is over until the next one starts.
let's say one legislator shows up for 30 meetings through the interim and the other one shows up for nothing, then your philosophy is to pay them both the same.
Mr. Chair, Senator, no. You could claim expenses. That is correct. The per diem would not be there. It would be considered to be included part of the salary.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to make the point I made a minute ago. Just as we're discussing Senator Vandeveer's proposed legislation, resolutions, whatever, I want to make it clear that if there's anybody in the state legislature, either in this committee, or on the floor of the Senate, floor of the other body, whatever, who is offended by per diem and how we've handled it over the years, that person does not have to take the per diem. And I would expect people offended by the system will act accordingly.
Mr. Chair, I would argue that I think the statement by the senator just now, in his view, there is some compensation there. If he comes in for special meetings, he is viewing there as being some compensation. The per diem really isn't to cover expenses, yet that is. So if it is compensation, which it's clearly viewed by some as compensation because it isn't, there is no accountable expense tied to it, then it really is salary. And if we want to call it something, you know, if we want to call it salary and say that if you come in for an extra meeting, you get X number of dollars a day, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I think, and I don't think most people would, and they would understand that they had an increase in compensation. But if you change the amount, it would still have to go through the next general election.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Vandeveer, some people have jobs during the interim, and they are not necessarily paid a salary for that job. And so if they take a day off to come to the Capitol during the interim, they are losing compensation from their other job. So would you consider per diem then to offset that expense they have?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I would think that you have, instead of going there to receive your compensation that day and you came to the Capitol and received compensation, no, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I'm just saying calling it an expense, which is the implication of per diem, is wrong. If it is compensation, now you're saying the expense was not being at work, but most people who have had two jobs would view that they go to this job and get this much money, and they go to the other job, and where they go to one or the other, they don't go to both at the same
time. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the difference is that in the system we have paying legislators' salary, you get to collect that salary during the interim even if you don't show up for anything. And so then there would be a financial disincentive for a legislator to leave their other job to come and do any work during the interim because they're going to actually lose compensation as a result of it. And I mean, I can just tell you, I've been here long enough, so I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen where it's hard to get people to come to meetings in the interim because, you know.
Well, I'm not really sure.
They're losing money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, I'm not sure there's many people that are here for the money, but if that were the case, you know, if we meet outside of regular session, I mean, do we have to? And some people will say that, you know, we don't. When we have to, and that it is by choice that we do. But we are clearly set up to be in session a limited number of days. The Constitution prescribes it. And if we decide to come in, again, if we want to do per diem or if we want to pay ourselves to come in on those days, we can, but it is still compensation. It's still pay. It's not covering an expense unless it's a documented expense. To say that we spend $96 a day to be here, yeah, it probably does cost me that to get someone to do the work at my office that I can't do. But it's not an expense as most of us deal with it. Anytime we don't go to our regular jobs, we can't say that that was an expense. I mean, when we go to our second job. So,
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. Watson could clarify, but some years ago, change, and I don't know if recall if it was by statute or by some other form, that for tax purposes, our per diem is treated as compensation because it is we have the withholding and pay state and federal income tax on our per diem.
Only if you're in the metro.
Pardon me? Only if we're in the metro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Discriminated against?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Is that the case?
No.
Mr. Watson.
So did we not buy, you know, we can talk about taxes and fees, but we've done the same thing ourselves. I'd like to know if that is in statute or where it is. But we are treating, from tax purposes, our per diem as compensation, but we're calling it something else. Is that correct?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the reason for the tax treatment is that that's required by federal law. The change in the procedure occurred some years ago as a result of an audit that was done. I think it was more than 10 years ago, where the auditors said that they reviewed the federal law on a legislator's tax home and per diem payments. It was their opinion that the per diem payments had to be taxed. We made some changes, and I think it's more complicated than my explanation would suggest, because we have problems counting the number of days of session, counting the number of days that a member may come into the Capitol on business, and you're allowed a certain number of days, and if you go over that, then there are tax consequences. If you stay under that, there are not. I'm sorry, I don't recall all the implications, but the way we treat it is the way we have to treat it because of the federal tax laws.
So, Mr. Chairman, I remember there being some other rationale that I won't bring up, but for why we did that. But it is kind of an interesting in terms of this terminology that we use, and the discussion in terms of how we do or don't claim it, or the varying demands depending on responsibilities over here. As to whether it should be just for the per diem, should just be for those actual expenses, or if we should be calling compensation. But that, I mean, I think that's in part what Senator Vandiver is trying to get at. And, you know, we do have a kind of unique system here, and whether this is the answer to it, resolving it, I don't know. I think we all know that,
okay, well,
that politically it's very difficult to raise that base compensation. And even, I don't know what happened to that council that was supposed to make recommendations that would automatically go into effect unless we proactively negated it, if that's still a practice, or if we just don't do that anymore. But there's been no virtual adjustment for so many years of the compensation that I understand why we make some of the decisions we do relative to per diem.
Let's get back to the bill. Senator Vandiver, you'd have to put a number into line 1.8 mm-hmm. for us to act on this. What number do you have in mind?
Well, I thought the committee could discuss it. One, I think the intent on my amendment was probably to put in the $66 max at maximum.
That's not here, though. We just need a salary amount. What salary amount is the author you want on this so we can consider it? So
I think the comparable equivalent would be about $36,000 probably. I'm not sure.
Does somebody want to offer $36,000 on that line? Somebody want to offer that?
Well, actually, that's probably not the right number.
Mr. Chair, I think you're... Senator Vandiver, your math is very, very bad. But.
Yeah, it is.
Does anybody want to offer a number?
Can I just offer a comment, Mr. Chair?
Senator Sanjo?
I'm just, as I look at that, and let's just put in $31,700, and I think, I'm not up here a lot, at least haven't been in the past during the interim. But again, there are times during a bonding year. I think there have been years where I've probably spent 25 to 30 days with that committee out on the road. And maybe that's maybe you know, there are folks there, and I'm not suggesting that I ought to get more because I do that. But there's probably people up here that do spend a lot more time than those 25 to 30 days engaged in what they do, and I know that people with committee chairs and so on carry a much higher load. And so I'm just thinking that the straight salary doesn't seem to accommodate, at least for me, the thought that we do have probably different levels of activity in terms of work within our Senate force. And I don't know, it's just something to think about as we just kind of go on a straight salary kind of thing for everybody.
Well, I think the Senate File 710 anticipates a straight salary. Let me just ask, does anybody on the Rules Committee want to offer a number on line 1.8 and move the bill? If not, let's stop chatting. I think we've gone over ground several times here. Unless members think they don't fully understand Senate File 710. Senator Frederickson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, I wanted to make some comments based from a rural legislator's perspective. The discussion sort of is centered around metropolitan legislators who don't move from their home and a fairly easy commute to the Capitol. But if I remember our early sessions where we approved the mileage for members, I think we have members serving in the Senate who live more than 300 miles from their home. We have some that live more than 200. Many of us live more than 100. And for us, we move for 5 months out of our home and spend 5 out of the 7 days here. Now, theoretically, you could say, well, we'd be reimbursed for all our expenses, but you'd be nickel and diming all the little expenses that occur from our job requiring us to be here and then to be reimbursed for those. I don't think the system that you envision makes sense for rural legislators. I think that the per diem system where we have a set amount for moving from our home for the session makes far more sense than a documented expense amount.
Senator Vandiver.
That may be. However, most of us, if I'm going to deduct expenses or anything else in our jobs, have to do that. It is a problem, but and it would be more inconvenient, I agree, to have to document the expenses. But on the other hand, that's what mileage logs and those things are, and most people have to do it. So if we're going to claim them, I think there should be some basis for the claim. Number two, I think if we took the maximum number of legislative days and plugged in a per diem amount and added 31 to, we would have a fixed amount to use in the bill, whether you wanted to use the 96 or the 66. Because I'm not here to argue that they were overpaid or we make too much money. The purpose of these is the bills is to deal with the process, and I know, and to have a discussion, and hopefully a broader one when we actually take action on our compensation, which is the other two bills. But in this case, that would get at the intent, my intent at this point. If you wanted to use the 96 and put that in, that would be fine with me because it would have to go to pass the general election. It would be very transparent to everybody how we were doing it. And it would be a much higher number than the we discussed earlier. Do we know the maximum number of legislative days? And then I would put that number in there.
If that would be acceptable, if the chair is looking for a number,
does everybody on the committee understand what the bill is?
Understand what the bill is. I don't understand what he's talking about.
Okay, well, we're dealing with the bill. Does anybody want to put a number in 1.8 and offer the bill? Because if not, let's move on.
Let's move on.
If somebody wants to, let's do that. Because I think we know for this bill to be active, you have to put a number in 1.8. On this particular point, Senator Cohen.
Mr.
Chairman, I just want to make sure we're talking appropriate language. And I want to inquire from Mr. Watson, when was the last time there was a cost of living or some other comparable kind of legislative pay raise within statute? Which session?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, as I recall, the last session that passed a bill to increase legislators' pay was about 1997, about 10 years ago.
Okay. All right. So, Chairman, the reason I ask that, I don't know if Senator Vanderbilt is interested in something like, if you're also supposed to include catching up on cost of living increases that haven't taken place over the 10 years, because then it seems to me that the salary amount, and I'm not necessarily offering this, I just want to find out if this is something like Senator Vanderveer had in mind, would probably put in a salary of around $55,000 to $60,000 a year, so roughly doubling the salary from 31.5, if that would be a number you'd be comfortable with.
Well, I'm not here to pick the number, and if somebody wanted to put one in there.
Senator Vanderveer, it's your bill.
Yes, it is. All right.
Do you have a number or don't you?
Yes. Does somebody here know? They gave us a precise number of days on the per diem. What is the days in 2000?
Senator Vanderveer, a calculation. If you put $96 at 365 days, it's $35,040.
But, Mr. Chair, I'm saying of the legislative days, there is a prescribed number. It is a definite known.
Senator Vanderveer?
Yes.
Unless somebody wants to move this, I'd like to set it aside. And Senator Vanderveer, if you do have a number, I'm perfectly willing to take the bill up another day.
Mr. Chair, if that is obviously important, I think you're right. And if we could temporarily lay the bill over or however you'd want to deal with it until I get the number, I could do that probably in the next day or two. And would be happy to do that.
Senator Vanderveer, so you're not prepared at this moment to proceed with Senate File 710.
Senate File 710 did not have a hearing request in, Mr. Chair, and I did not know that you gave them hearings with or without them. I was still working on it, so this is my fault. I didn't know you were that open to hearing the bills, and I apologize for that. And this bill was not ready at the moment.
Senator Bayh.
Mr. Chairman, I think for Senator Vanderveer's benefit, I think it's been the procedure of the Senate often to hear bills have requests, just as a courtesy to authors. I know I have bills scheduled in the Tax Committee on Tuesday and Thursday next week that authors have not asked for a hearing on. I just think I realize in the House they probably do things differently, having been there, but we've scheduled bills next week for taxes that don't have hearing requests, and we've sent a notice out to the authors, and we haven't heard back from any of them that they're not interested in hearing them. So just for Senator Vanderveer's benefit, the Senate, I think, does frequently do that.
Okay, I'll ask one more time. Does any member on the committee have a motion to make on 710? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsett.
You know, the best comment I've ever heard about compensation, somebody had said the compensation should never be so high that it's why you run or why you stay, but it should never be so low that people can't serve. And I think you got to take a look at what this compensation is and try to figure out a way that everybody in Minnesota who wants to serve can serve.
I think that was my Starbucks said that.
No.
So good that I think I said that to you a few years ago.
No, in fact, it was former Senator Becky Lord. I thought it was the best statement I've ever heard about where the compensation should be.
Okay, let's Senate File 246. Senator Vanderveer, Senate File 246. Senator?
From my information, could I ask you what is this? What did we do with 710? Is it laid over or is it?
Laid over at the author's request, I guess. There was nobody on the committee to make a motion. All the chair can do is schedule them. I can't move them. And I certainly don't want to move ones that I don't agree with. I hear bills I don't agree with. Senator Vanderveer, Senate File 246.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 246 simply says that the decisions relating to per diem and reimbursement of expenses shall be set by resolution adopted by the Senate instead of the committee, the Rules Committee. So that those decisions are made with a vote and a public debate on the Senate floor.
Okay, questions on the bill? It's an interesting construction because it's a law that also that applies to the House of Representatives, but you're only requesting that this resolution be adopted by the Senate?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe it is the House author's intent to, when he takes up the bill, to include the House in it. So he will have an amendment in it to accomplish that in the House. And we would probably want to do an amendment to this to make it conform to that.
Anybody have an amendment to the bills, ones? Anybody have a motion?
Mr. Chair, and maybe a question for counsel. For instance, in line 1.17, is it really appropriate for the Senate to be suggesting to the House how it does its business? And my follow-up then would be, if it's not, then I would move to delete references to the House in this bill.
This is a law that applies to the House and the Senate. This is a current law that's being amended.
Okay. Thank you.
Does anybody have a motion, an amendment, or? Okay, failing a motion or amendment, we'll set that one aside. Senate Resolution 24, Senator Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, this does relate just to the Senate and should meet the requirements of the members to tell the House what to do. And it simply says that the Senate will decide on the floor. The reimbursement, which was the original goal, and very simply, I think it just provides a record of on record of how members voted. It provides the public with a little more accountability. It's not done by a committee of 10; it's done by 12 or whatever. It's done by the body itself. I think it's very important that we do that because in this particular case, it's different than a lot of other rules that are made. We are, in effect, voting ourselves money from the public purse. And I think that requires an extra effort to be transparent and to give the public, without question, the full accountability I think they deserve on this area.
Discussion.
Chair, this is unique to the Senate. It's what I did as a city council member. I think it's what Congress does in terms of pressing either red or green, and I would be supportive of this.
Other discussion? Well, let me offer a suggestion. I, too, support members of the Senate voting yes or no. And full transparency. And I believe one of the things that goes on is people often vote no on things and then take advantage of what others voted yes on. So what this resolution simply says is that we will vote on the Senate floor to ratify the amount set by the Rules Committee. A member who votes yes by that action will show that they agree with that. A member who votes no shall not collect any per diem unless they have a written request to the Senate for per diem. That way we have full transparency and honesty about who's for what. Senator Vandiver, what do you think of that?
Mr. Chair, I think it's an excellent amendment.
Well, I was actually, Senator Vandiver, just to be, since this is my responsibility as chair of the Rules Committee, I would prefer if the committee would adopt this resolution with me as author. because I'm willing to take the hit in the Senate, if there is one, for asking members to vote yes or no on the Senate floor. So I would not want to put you through that, Senator Vanderveer. I would not want you to have to carry the responsibility of having members take responsibility for collecting per diem. I will take that responsibility, so I would prefer if the committee would adopt my resolution, and we would take this up on the Senate floor, and people can vote red or green. Senator Cohen.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman, on the resolution. Is there a reason that you would not, on paragraph 3, just simply strike everything after on line 111 in any amount, period?
Pardon me, Senator Cohen?
Is there a reason you wouldn't limit paragraph 3 and exclude everything after the phrase in any amount on 1.11 and just eliminate the rest of it?
Well, Senator Cohen, I'm trying to be flexible. I'm trying not to put members in a position of difficulty. I think we're looking for full transparency. And if a member votes yes on this resolution, they're accountable. They voted yes for per diem. If a member votes no and does not accept per diem, so be it. Okay, that works. But if a member votes no and then accepts per diem, I think asking them for a written request for that per diem is, at whatever amount, is accountability, transparency and accountability. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we did something similar to this during special session. I can't remember if it was the reverse of it, but there was, I think, each one had to make a decision as to whether they wanted to accept per diem or how much. Did we not?
Today the system is such that the maximum is presumed unless you ask for either none or less. So we have, I think there are three or four members who take less. One of those members, and I believe there's been two payments on per diem already, and I believe there are only four members of the Senate that have not taken the full 96. And of those four members, one of them has historically not taken Saturdays and Sundays.
Mr. Chairman?
And the author, and Representative Vanderveer, I don't know if he, well, he can say himself if he wants to, but Representative Vanderveer is one of the, he can say for himself. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in your construct, would this require anybody who does not want to take the full amount of per diem to vote against it?
No.
In order to then, but
no,
where
the current
does it
system,
say that?
Senator Olson, the current system is they today send a letter saying, send me less. They do that today. Today, the member currently sends a note saying, send me less. Senator Cohen has done this. How have you done this, Senator Cohen, over the years? You send a note, right, to the office?
I'm not sure if I send a note or if there's a letter, something that comes to me from the fiscal office.
Could you identify yourself for the tape?
I'm Eileen Lindsay, Fiscal Services. And Senator Cohen, you have sent us an email. We put it in your file, so it's so noted that you do take less. You take 85.796.
So, Senator Olson, the way this works is
this wouldn't require that they vote no in order to then request the amount.
Absolutely not. So, Senator Vanderveer, you could work with this?
I think it's better than the one I had, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Metzen moves Senate resolution, Senate SCR 009-1 be adopted.
So moved.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion adopted.
Okay.
Senator Vanderveer, if you would stick with us just for a second, give a Star Tribune editorial. Senator Vanderveer, there's a matter that I do want to, and I appreciate your apology for the closed meeting comment. But I think we've got a issue here. I want members to I want to consider this carefully, members, because and also then a copy of the this. Three things are being passed out. Editorial in the Star and Tribune this morning, the paper of record. Sorry, St. Paul Pioneers.
Could you identify yourself for the record?
Well, Senator Cohen, I thought you should say that you wanted to be quoting the St. Paul Pioneer Press, but...
Well, I'm not pointing the New York Times yet.
Then there's a copy of Senator Vandeveer prepared a held a news conference and prepared a video or a disc or a what do you call these now that go out on the web? A YouTube video or something. That two of the frames in that are shown here. Three of the frames. And then there's a copy of the Senate rules. Number 56, Standards of Conduct for the Senate. And Senator Vandeveer, the implication, in my judgment, the implication of your press conference in the video is that there was a partisan effort to do something in secret. And it appears to me that that's simply inaccurate. In the first instance, it was not done in secret. The Rules Committee is open, taped. As the Star and Tribune points out in its editorial, the press were all here. There were newspaper articles all about it. And secondly, the notion that it was partisan is simply not true. There are members of both caucuses who voted against your motion. In addition, the motion in this committee for the per diem maximum was offered on a bipartisan basis. And so I think in both instances, that's just simply inaccurate. And so then if people review number 56.3, improper conduct includes conduct that violates a rule or administrative policy of the Senate, that violates accepted norms of Senate behavior, that betrays the public trust, or that tends to bring the Senate into dishonor or disrepute. Senator Vandeveer, I must tell you, I believe the implication of your press conference and of this video tends to bring the Senate into disrepute. And I just think we need to nip that in the bud. You've apologized, but I think that's a serious matter because there was not a secret meeting. And there simply was not a partisan plot. And so, Senator Vandeveer, I think that video needs to be pulled back because it's not accurate. And Senator Vandeveer, let me leave it at that.
Mr. Chair, the video, I pulled the video because of the earlier statement. It's supposed to be off the web right now. Number two, however, there's also an issue I think that we should discuss then, if that's what we're going to do, about not recognizing members on the floor, because I believe that the rules do provide that members will be recognized. And at the close of session that day, the president asked for on the motion to adjourn, and I said very, very clearly and had been standing and said point of order, the president stopped and then proceeded to say, we are adjourned. And I think that was certainly had the appearance of a concerted effort to not have discussion on the floor. Now, maybe there are other interpretations. However, again, in 9 years that I served in the House at 4 a.m. listening to people we didn't want to listen to, we never failed to recognize a member.
We'll get to that issue. Let's get back on the issue that's been raised.
All right.
And I freely admit, I'm raising it. I frankly didn't care about the video until I read the Star and Tribune editorial today. Then I viewed the video. I was outraged. I do believe your actions bring disrepute on the Senate. Because, Senator, it is simply not true that it was done secretly or partisanly. It's simply not true.
I believe that point is debatable.
Senator, do you think it is true that the per diem maximum was set in a secret meeting?
I do not believe that the per diem maximum was set in a secret meeting.
Okay, so what, you believe it was done partisanly?
I believe the effort to bring the issue to the floor of the Senate, I believe believe there was an effort to prevent discussion and to prevent that from happening.
Senator Vandiver, do you argue that it was a partisan effort to in a closed meeting? First, let's settle that. Then let's move on to your issue.
It was not a closed meeting.
Was it a partisan effort?
Originally, the passing of the per diem increase?
Yes.
No, it was not.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, now let's go to yours. Okay. I viewed the video, and Senator Metzen recognized you. And you spoke. Within the Senate rules, Senator Metzen allowed you to speak on the extent of the motion, Senator Vandiver. Then, the bills are here before this committee. Because, as every member of the Senate knows, I have a policy of hearing every bill that comes before my committee. So, Senator Vandiver, what is your point about someone not allowing you to process an idea that you have? I simply don't see it.
Mr. Chair, if I could, the issue with the secretiveness, and it is not in the video, but clearly the President heard and did not acknowledge a member of the Senate, and it was relating to this issue after a long exchange attempting to keep any discussion of it from coming up. Now,
Senator Vandiver, the video shows that you were recognized.
The video does not have the clip because the President, you would have, if you think you're mad now. If
Senator, I'm not mad. I'm just trying to do my job.
If you put the clip in there where he clearly ignores me, the tape looked too bad, and we did not put it in because the decision was that, I mean, we can both pull that clip out, and then if there's anyone in this room that thinks that I was not ignored, we could go a little bit further. But if you watch the clip and you hear the clear audio, member standing at that point has, according to rules, would be recognized.
Senator Vandiver, was this video prepared by a Senate staff member who is paid by the Senate?
The video was
The thing you put out on the web, was that prepared by a Senate staff member who is paid by the Senate with public tax dollars?
I don't know if the caucus pays them or it was paid for by a caucus. Or caucus staff did the video.
So that is a member of the Senate staff who is paid for by the Senate with tax dollars.
I'm not sure how the Senate staff are paid.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sendler.
May I just intervene? Clearly the room, the meeting in room 107 that day was not closed, absolutely not closed. There were reporters there, but I think in the context of the senator's comments here, and you can agree or not agree, and I suspect that will be the case, the so-called behind closed doors was in the grand scope of things. Obviously, Senator Vandiver wanted to bring this to the floor for a vote. He was not able to do that. And he suggestively, I think, just in the grand scheme, suggested that the meeting in 107 was behind closed doors. It certainly wasn't the open public.
On a bipartisan vote, he was not able to bring his bill to the floor. The bill is being heard in the committee, which is the normal process. I simply do not understand Senator Vandiver's point, other than to put the Senate into disrepute.
I think that's a fairly strong statement for this error. I don't feel necessarily we're in disrepute. I simply think that he may have erred in his language, but I think what is here reflects, his general intent with respect to wanting to make this a public vote.
Mr. Chair, I did and do apologize for the behind-closed-door statement. That was a mistake, and it shouldn't have been in there, and it was wrong. The idea, however, that there was a concerted effort to prevent discussion on the floor, maybe it is a matter of interpretation. However, that is what it appeared to me, especially when I was clearly ignored on a procedural motion or that I was making at the end of session.
Now, but Senator Vanderveer, are you aware that the Senate rules are set up in a way, and have been for years, to have an orderly process whereby bills and resolutions are heard? Your action was to pull a bill out of committee before it ever had a chance to be heard. That you were the one pressing the issue that your bill was so important, and then, in a Democratic way, you lost 20-47 on a bipartisan basis. The ones following the rules and the process were the President of the Senate and the members who think there should be an orderly process to hear bills. You have now had each one of your bills heard in the Rules Committee. Something is going to the floor, which apparently meets your feeling about how this should have been handled. What more would you like the Chair of the Rules Committee or the President of the Senate to do? Do we need to recognize you at every moment you feel you get to speak?
Mr. Chair.
Because if we did that, Senator Vanderveer, wouldn't we have chaos on the Senate floor?
Well, Mr. Chair, could you maybe tell me what "to the motion to adjourn," that statement means from the President?
Mr. Chairman, just a
Senator,
thought.
Mr. President, we
called on the good senator a couple of times, and he was able to speak. We did not ignore him. Then the last order of business is announcements of Senate interest. And he's up, and we don't debate at that point. They're announcements, simply announcements.
Because so we're ready to adjourn.
This was on the motion to adjourn. Now,
That's not debatable.
Where the debates are handled.
The President said "to the motion to adjourn." I said "point of order." Isn't that, wouldn't you be recognized at that point? Is that not the appropriate time to be recognized for a point of order? It was then that it was ignored. And the priest, now this was in the first day. But anyway, this could be quite a, we might have quite a bit of back and forth.
Senator Vanderveer, we may have quite a bit of back and forth on this.
Okay.
Because in my judgment, I'm going to be very straightforward. In my judgment, you have, by your actions, challenged the integrity of the Senate and challenged me as a chair as to whether I had a secret meeting or not, because I did not. You say, and Senator Senjum says, well, it was just in the heat of something. I don't care. It was simply not true. And in the Senate, Senator, we try to treat each other with respect. I talked to you on the Senate floor and told you that I was probably going to hear this thing. Everybody in the Senate knew that I hear all bills. But you individually decided that, no, you personally had to decide when the Senate processed the bill. And Senator, in my judgment, that is putting your individual actions before the full sentence. Because this bill, all of your bills, are being handled in an orderly process. And you're getting a result, apparently, that you're happy with.
And, Mr. Chair, all my motions were made in an orderly fashion, according to the rules.
Well, apparently one of them wasn't in order.
Well, that...
Senator Olson.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't think the Senate has been brought into any dishonor or disrepute that it maybe doesn't already have. We're all already viewed as something less than used car salesmen in terms of public popularity.
Senator Olson, my voters don't view me that way.
I think this has been kind of worn into the ground. Frankly, I'm kind of tired of it. And if you two want to fight on your own, I think maybe go ahead. But I'm tired of listening to this. I hope we just end it right now, unless you are determined to wear one of our senators right into the ground, which I think that behavior, too, could be said to bring our dishonor and disrespect to the Senate.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, it takes more than a moment to prepare an untruthful video that is communicating a message to the public. I understand if someone says something to another member of the Senate in the heat of a moment that they might not have thought through, but it takes quite a bit of time and thought and preparation to create a video message to go out to the public.
Any further discussion? Oh, we have other things here. Yes, we have Senator Betzel here. Okay, let's take up...
Am I excused, Mr. Chair?
Is he excused?
Do you have other bills before us, Senator?
Thank you, Committee Member.
Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr.
Senate File 106.
Mr. Chair and Member, Senate File 106 is an issue dealing with legislative pay. It has two parts to it, and I've talked to the Senate Fiscal staff about this. There's a statute 3.099 subdivision 1 that requires that following an election, the compensation of the members is to be paid on January 15th. And I'm assuming that that was put in the statute because we don't know if a member is actually going to be seated until the legislative session is convened. And if somebody is paid on the first day of January and then for whatever reason the legislature chooses not to seat that an individual, well, there could be an issue. However, in the past, payrolls were prepared on the 1st and the 15th of the month. I think that in this day and age, individuals who are having automatic withdrawals out of their accounts to pay their bills could find themselves in a bit of a bind because if the paycheck doesn't show up to the 15th and things are being withdrawn, they could find themselves with insufficient funds. There's probably no reason to wait until January 15th, as happened this year for every member of the House and the Senate. So my suggestion would be that 5 days after the member takes the oath of office, that the the members would be paid. Certainly, the payrolls could be prepared in advance and then just released, and then 5 days later. One issue that Fiscal had that probably is not really of a concern, but there are some new members that don't always complete their paperwork in a timely manner, and it's very difficult for them to pay them. But if they haven't got their paperwork in order, they're not going to get paid whether they wait until March. You know, they got to get that done before they get paid, regardless of whether it's the 15th or earlier date. So that's Section 1 of the bill. The other section is an issue that unfortunately came up during the special session in 2005. There is a requirement that during a special session, travel would be paid for one round trip reach 7 calendar days. Now, of course, in 2005, and we hope that this will never happen again, but we wound up having to have two floor sessions each week, you know, once every 3 days. Yet, we had members, especially from Greater Minnesota, and we have a number of them on this committee, who had to drive in great distances. They were required to be here, but the law said they could only be paid mileage once. And I don't think that's fair. Now, I live in the metro area. I actually had to be here virtually every day because I was on one of the conference committees. But I think that this is not a major fiscal cost. But if we are going to require members to come in more than once during each week of the special session, they should be paid their mileage. And it's a simple matter, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Flanagan, or Mr.
Chairman, as long as the members have their paperwork in and part of the payroll, it would work. Oftentimes, new members don't get us their paperwork for a while. 10 days might be better if we could compromise on that.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, if somebody hasn't filled out their W-4 withholding forms or whatever, I don't know. They're not going to get paid. I don't know whether we should hold up everybody else's paycheck just because some new member, you know, hasn't gotten their paperwork in. So they're going to get paid when they get their paperwork in. If they want to wait till April, they'll get paid in April. So,
any questions from committee members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum.
All right. Senator Betzel. In the case of the special session, and I didn't do per diem or mileage just because it didn't feel right. But that choice would continue under this scheme, right?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Sandstrom, absolutely. Now, I took per diem because I was for every day I had to be here, including the 4th of July, but that was my choice. But we did have people who had to drive in from great distances, and you know, I look at people on this committee and realize that some people had to make sacrifices to drive in, and we couldn't pay them for the second trip even if we wanted to, and I don't think that's fair. I think if a person is required to be here and they want to be paid for their mileage, they should be paid.
Senator Clark moves Senate File 106 to recommend to pass. Further discussion? Anybody in the audience want to testify? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, motion adopted.
Thank you,
Senator. SR6, this is the one regarding travel. Is Senator Parrish still here? I wonder, Senator Senjum and Senator Olson, could we solve this by just taking out the reference to the NCSL? I mean, instead of adding things, why don't we just take things out?
I think that would make more sense, because if something is related to their activity, would it be evaluated on a case-by-case basis? Is that what your suggestion, Mr. Chairman?
We have the A1 amendment. Senator Olson, but I think members recall that the way this works in actuality is that the chair of the Rules Committee says yay or nay to travel. And so I don't want to at all send the signal that by doing this, Senator Parrish is going to necessarily get where she wants, because there has to be some limits on what things are paid for by the Senate. Okay.
I'm not sure that's a move to try to get lots of travel. I think it was just looking at something on at least weighing something evenly to what another option.
I do want to say what I've been told. I'm not an expert on this, but what I've been told is that there is some concern. Apparently, Senator Parrish's interest in the ALEC organization, ALEC. And there's some concern that they are, and I'm not an expert on this, but there's some concern that they are funded by non-public dollars. They're funded by lobbyists, basically, or organizations. And some people question whether we should be reimbursing for those kinds of trips.
Senator Olson. I think that the same the second part of this resolution. There is some statement that we have somewhere either in our law that gets around that for NCSL, because there are companies that sponsor or host organization functions within that organization, and I don't think that's much different than what this one is.
Is there, as I understand NCSL, it is basically funded by legislatures with public dollars. We pay fees or something. Dues. But they do have sponsors who maybe put on coffee parties or whatever they do, but that the agenda of the organization is totally controlled by bipartisan, non-industry, just, you know, professionals who are there to provide a forum for legislatures in a bipartisan way. Whereas the concern on an organization like ALEC is that many of those agendas are set by the organizations that fund it. And I'm just telling you what I'm being told by others. I don't know the answer, and so what I would be doing is weighing these requests based on, take out the NCSL preference here, it's Council of State Governments, fine, but I don't want to at all send the signal then that everybody who asks for travel to everything still is going to get it, because I am concerned that we maybe shouldn't be using tax dollars to send to kind of industry-sponsored events. I mean, it just seems to me there's a line there that we have to think about, Senator Senjum. And Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, as one who is a dues-paying member of ALEC,
okay.
I'll tell you that I have been for many years.
Okay.
I have served on comparable committees, both environment committees and education committees, both. One in one case signed by, appointed by the majority leader to NCSL, and either designated by the ELEC representative or given an opportunity to join that. I have gotten to very few of those meetings because they do involve an expense and on either organization. The communications that I receive, they're essentially on the very topics that are germane to all of the things that we are doing in the legislature.
The question is, are they bipartisan or nonpartisan?
It is bipartisan. There may be some philosophical difference in the approach to it, but I mean that I consider healthy, both in terms of what the exposures, the programs, the kinds of work of the NCSL, and same with ELEC. I don't see anything that egregious on it, or that it's noted that there's anything that appears to be driven strongly by some special interests agenda. That's a decision that you know the Rules Committee can make, or that can be analyzed at the time a request is made. If you are, I haven't looked at what you are.
Mr. Watson, the amendment deletes everything after seminars on line 7, and then on line 8, everything before on. So it basically takes out the mention of NCSL and CSG.
Okay. Chairman, I think, you know, why not try that?
Mr. Flower.
Up to your discretion.
Mr. Flower.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought I could offer a clarification.
Okay.
There is an organization called the Foundation. NCSL has a foundation, which is a separate entity, and it can take contributions from corporations for specific projects, studies, and that sort of thing. But there is no corporate or outside contributions to NCSL itself.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd like to for me to investigate as to what that kind of arrangement, I'd be happy to do that.
Why don't you do that? Mm-hmm. Senator Ferguson.
Chairman, a few times I've gone to consul state government activities, too, and I know that there are non-government types involved in there. In fact, on the Environment Task Force I'm on, there are industry members on that task force.
Okay.
But I can't tell you the specifics.
You don't know how they fund everything.
No, I do not.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, having attended the national conventions of both, it's amazing how much they look alike in terms of the cast of characters that surround them. the same folks tend from outside interests are at NCSL and they attend ELEC too. It's because those conventions are about equal in size at the national level. Quite large.
I just wanted to say that I know that NCSL has a foundation that receives funding. I served on a hunger task force that was sponsored by UPS. It happens to be an issue of concern to their foundation, and they contributed so legislators could be on a hunger task force. But I never requested nor received any Senate expenses for attending that meeting. So...
Okay.
Yes, I just question the need. If it's something that's sponsored in that manner, then you shouldn't need to have the Senate. You shouldn't need to request expenses from the Senate for it.
Clark moves the A1. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Clark moves that Senate resolution, is it 6?
What is it?
6. As amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. One more item, members. Senate Concurrent Resolution 0002. Deadlines. I believe the other body has passed a resolution with this wording today. Okay. So it's the exact same wording, and we will see if we pass this, how will we see this on the floor? Will we have a substitution, or what will happen? What's the timing of all this? If you receive the message today.
Mr. Chairman, if we get the Senate the House version first.
Okay, we were gone before they sent it to us, so we haven't received it yet. So we'll receive it on Monday.
That's right.
And then we would substitute We would just take the House resolution out. Yeah, they're identical.
We'll just take the House resolution. You know, obviously you can introduce this one, so it's on record that being introduced in the Senate. But under the companion bill system, we should take the House resolution and pass it in the Senate.
So, members, let's just process-wise, so I think what we should do is pass the SCCR 0002 out of committee, get it up to the Senate floor if members are willing, and then we will, Senator Senjum and I will just decide whether we want to proceed with that House one immediately on Monday with suspensions, or we can wait till Thursday or whatever works. Okay? So let's then go to the wording of the resolution. Mr. Watson? So look at SCCR 002. Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, the meat of the resolution is in lines 10 to 16, where it sets the deadlines for House policy committees to finish their action on bills Friday, March 23rd. The comparable deadlines for Senate policy committees would be Saturday, April 14th. The deadline for action on the omnibus appropriation bills to get out of the House divisions of their finance committee that is reported to the full finance committee would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, April 2nd. By that same time, this would impose a deadline for the full Senate to take action on those omnibus appropriation bills. So on the Senate side, it's passing the Senate by April 2nd. On the House side, it's getting all those bills out of the House divisions. A new element in this resolution is the fourth deadline, which is one for the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader to establish targets for action in conference committee no later than April 27th. The language in paragraph C about what happens if a bill fails to meet a deadline, that's just copied right out of Joint Rule 2.3, that as you fail to meet the deadline, then the bill gets referred to the Rules Committee, which can decide to forward it on after the deadline or just leave it here in the Rules Committee. Note the exceptions to the deadlines. They're in paragraph B on lines 7 to 9, and these are about the same as they have been before. That is, the deadlines don't apply to the Capital Investment Committee or the Finance Committee, the Taxes Committee, or the Rules Committee in the Senate. So once your bill is in the Finance Committee or the Tax Committee, there's no deadline on that action, other than the deadline for the Senate in line 13 of April 2nd to get all those bills out of the Senate.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious about the third deadline is 2 p.m. on Monday. Why do we get so specific of a time in that line?
I thought it was 3 p.m., actually.
Why do I just say it's, April 2nd?
Passover starts sundown.
Okay.
We're using 2 p.m.
They changed it to 2 so people would have time to get home.
Okay, well, good answer, Mr. Chairman.
So I think the thing to note here, members, is that the House does have some, on policy, the House has a certain advantage here a little bit because their deadline on March 23rd is going to define to a large extent which policy bills are going to be in play this session. Not totally because, you know, amendments and various things, but the overall thrust of this is that the Senate is going to really focus on the budget bills starting now. So we've actually talked about among chairs that the policy committees need to defer in terms of meeting time in these first coming weeks so that we can get our budget bills done. And then the policy committees can meet after the budget bills are out of their divisions, which will be maybe week or two before the break, and then they'll have a week or so after the break to meet, to take up House files that have passed or other matters that they want to process this year. It's slightly different than what we've done in the past, but it does put the focus on the budget bills rather than everything else. And this is an aggressive time frame for the budget bills off the Senate floor, including the tax bill. But I think we can get there. Senator Berglund has mentioned that sometimes the difficulty with her bill is the executive branch getting her fiscal notes. So we just need to try and get some fiscal notes out of the executive branch. But I think this can work. And if it doesn't work perfectly, Senator Sundrum, we'll change it next time. Don't you think that Easter Passover break would be wonderful if we passed all our budget bills?
It'll
just be...
Sure, assuming we don't start conference committees by then.
Well, we won't. We won't because the House won't have sent their files to us yet. Okay. And, for example, the tax bill we'll probably have to leave at the Senate desk. Well, because
the
they may not have sent us the tax bill yet. I think the key thing is that both the House and Senate are trying to give adequate time for the major conference committees to meet in April and early May and to really build in a cushion on the end. So we're done, with no question. We're just done. And it, we all need to recall that the only thing we really have to do this year is the budget. So that will drive the ultimate we're going home. Because we can have conference committees on policy bill maybe during the summer if they want to. If those conference committees don't close up, okay, fine. Or if some policy bill doesn't make it this year, we're here next year. Questions, thoughts? Senator Davies or Judge Davies? You really want to get in the middle of this?
Mr. Chairman, I desperately want to get into the middle.
Please identify yourself on the tape.
I'm Jack Davies, former senator and former judge and volunteer lobbyist. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would hope that the Senate would rescue the House from itself. The deadline the House has established leaves 8 weeks for busy work on the floor, at which time they turn off the committees and then they have 8 weeks for listening to each other's speeches on the floor.
Sir Davies, I need your volunteer lobbyist, right? Let me protect you from yourself. You may be totally correct in what you're about to say, but I think we're beyond the point where any discussion will change the end result. So I'm trying to, because these are taped meetings, and you have to do work in the House, too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is really so important. It's how one of the three branches of government works.
They've already passed it, Senator Davies. The House has already passed this.
But it's a concurrent resolution, if you understand. And if you never send it back to them, then it doesn't take effect. And I just want you to know that either of the bodies on a concurrent resolution by not passing it protects the other body.
Senator Davies, thank you so much.
You're
a caring man. Yes. Senator Berglund.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I imagine the worst thing that could happen if we're too aggressive here is that a bill might have to come to the Rules Committee.
Yes.
And that's okay. That's the safety valve.
Senator Berglund moves SCCR 0002 because she's the one who's got the toughest road to hoe. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Any other matters before the committee? Thank you, members. Meeting adjourned. Yeah, you used to it.